Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Probably takes very many people back, the sound of our childhoods, the iconic Super Mario theme tune, and the gaming industry has spent billions trying to make its products look as realistic as possible, so much so that playing some games feels like stepping into a film. But now, amid a slew of cutbacks and high-profile flops, some of the top developers are ditching those graphics budgets and they're getting right back to basics. And here to tell us all about it is Adam Maguire of the RTE Business Desk. Hello, Adam.
How are you?
The graphics have been very important, haven't they?
Yeah, they really have. You go all the way back to, you know, the early days of the video game industry. They've been central to the pitch of, you know, trying to get people to buy their games. You know, the 80s and the days of the NES, where Mario started out, of course, and the Sega Master System, they were 8-bit consoles. And that was the amount of data that the processor could handle at any one time. And it meant they were limited in the number of colours that could be shown on the screen, the amount of detail and movement in the game, the number of tones and notes that could be played in the music, which is why it was that MIDI kind of very basic sound that you had. Although they did some incredible things with the limitations they had. But it is why these games were pixelated and basic looking. The movement tend to be quite limited, almost like you were on rails. If you think of the platform games, you could go left or right. That was kind of it, really. And you had that kind of basic music like we heard from Mario there. But then Sega came along with the Mega Drive in the late 80s, which was the 16-bit console. So it meant its processor could now handle tens of thousands of colours instead of just a few hundred. The complexity of the game, the sounds and so on could be more detailed than before. And then Nintendo responded with the SNES, the Super Nintendo System, also a 16-bit console. So you had this kind of tit for tat going on. Then you had Sega coming along with the Sega Saturn, which was a 32-bit console. So again, more colours possible, more detail. This is when we start seeing some 3D games coming in, very blocky 3D games, it should be said. So then Nintendo responds with the N64, which, as the name suggests, was a 64-bit console. So it was upping the ante once again, more detail. And you had this kind of tit-for-tat arms race continuing for years and years. You know, when they'd maxed out on how many bits they were saying they had, they started talking about how many pixels it could fit on screen, you know, the resolution, how fast the graphics card was, how many cores the processor had, how much RAM was built in, ray tracing, fidelity, all these terms, all basically ways of saying it's more detailed, there's more colour, there's more... you know, everything going on screen, you know, talking about realistic skin textures, in-game physics, trying to make things look as real as possible. It was all about how it looked as a way of trying to get you to buy the game.
So what then has happened since all that?
Well, for a start, the return on investment has dipped considerably. If you look back at the jump in quality between the NES and the SNES, or a PlayStation 1 and a PlayStation 2 game, you can really see a significant difference. You know, that step up in the power that was there made a big difference to what you could see on screen. But now if you look at like a PlayStation 4 game, what that's capable of, and a PlayStation 5 game, you know, there is a difference, but it's not really as impressive or as notable as it was before. You know, one is capable of quite realistic images, the other is capable of very realistic images. You know, it doesn't really matter a huge amount. When you get to the point where you're honing in on the textures of the clothing a character is wearing, or how the beams of light shine through the trees, or, you know, you're probably kind of getting to the point where, is this actually making the game any better? And there's an ad recently for a Spider-Man game on the PlayStation 5 Pro. And in it, developers were talking about how when you're swinging through New York as Spider-Man, you can see a very clear, realistic reflection of Spider-Man in the windows of the skyscrapers in New York. And you go, that's nice, but, you know.
Very niche, yeah.
Is it going to make it, you know, and it turns out the vast majority of people don't really care about it. It's certainly not enough to change their mind about whether or not they're going to buy a game. Certainly not convincing them to spend hundreds of euro on a new console in order to be able to buy the game. And, you know, that's a big part of the problem, because these high-end AAA games aren't cheap to buy, and the machines that you need to play them on are also quite expensive too, but they're not cheap for the games companies either. You know, that step from the PS4 to the PS5 graphics wouldn't have seemed revolutionary to a consumer, but the development of that console would have cost Sony hundreds of millions, probably billions of dollars to actually make that happen. You know, the same goes for Microsoft with its Xbox console. And, you know, Sony actually would have initially sold PlayStation consoles at a loss in order to gain market share. They really bet heavy on this being a success. Meanwhile, developers who are making these actual games would spend a fortune doing so as well, because these Hollywood-style games have Hollywood-style budgets now. The Spider-Man 2 game that I was talking about there, which is actually made by a Sony subsidiary, is said to have cost around $300 million to develop, for example. Like huge, huge money. Mm-hmm. Many films have been made for less than that, big films.
They get it back, don't they?
Well, not always, you know, because, you know, okay, the game costs 60, 70 euro a piece, whatever it might be, and there's all the little bits of, you know, in-game purchases and so on, but it's not necessarily the case. You know, there have been some big flops. We spoke before about Sony's Concord, which cost around $200 million to make, flopped hard. They pulled it within days of launching. Warner Brothers is said to have taken a $200 million bath on a game based on the Suicide Squad from the DC Comics universe. So it's no longer a guarantee that, it's worth spending that kind of money and you're going to get it back.
Do the companies then see that the consumers are looking for something different now too?
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, while for a while there was a push from gamers for bigger and better and more realistic games, it's not really happening anymore. Even among, you know, hardcore gamers, there's a growing realization that it's about the experience the game offers rather than just the graphics. You know, we're kind of at a point now where the graphics don't need to get any better, and it's partially down to the fact that we've had a lot of games that promised amazing graphics and an amazing experience and ended up falling short of that, being a bit disappointing. But it's also down to the fact that the gaming audience has grown dramatically in the past decade or so. It's no longer characterised by that kind of stereotypical male teen or early 20s guy sitting in his bedroom playing video games. You now have players of all genders, all ages, all abilities, and many of those aren't looking for the most challenging technical game possible. They don't want something that's going to take them hours and hours to complete or to master. They maybe want something they can dip in and out of, maybe something they can play with friends or family, either in the room together or over the internet. But I think Sony and Microsoft and a lot of developers, they were just too slow to react to this. They continued to fight that console war, bringing out cutting-edge exclusive titles as a way of convincing people to buy the consoles. You know, developers bringing out games that required the latest console or a high-end gaming PC, which is very expensive to play it properly. At the same time, though, you had this separate segment of the industry enjoying massive growth because they did the opposite. They focused on making themselves accessible and as easy to get into by as many people as possible.
Right. What do you mean by that? How did they do it?
Well, if you look at some of the most expensive the most popular games of today, even of all time, they're not the ones that are the most impressive in terms of graphics. Minecraft is the best-selling game of all time, more than 300 million sales in the 13 or so years that it's existed, which represents billions and billions of euro in revenue. And that's before you get into all the little add-ons, the in-game purchases that people can make and the merchandise sales and everything else around it. But if you were looking at the graphics alone, you know, the game shouldn't have been a hit. And it wasn't action-packed or high-octane either, kind of slow, quiet kind of game. Even by 2011 standards when it came out, it looked old-fashioned, it looked basic. It was something that you would have expected to see on the NES or the SNES in the 80s and 90s. But it turned out that none of that really mattered. If anything, it kind of added to the charm of the game. What really mattered was that it was fun to play. And just as importantly, it was accessible to any type of player. You didn't need to have the latest console or a powerful machine to play it. And that opened the door to younger, more casual users who didn't want to or weren't able to spend hundreds of thousands of euro on their gaming rig. And, you know, you look at all the other big games of today, Fortnite, PUBG, Roblox, none of them look amazing, but they're fun to play and they're accessible to users. And they've largely taken what you might call the Netflix approach to the platform. So rather than making themselves exclusive on one, that you had to buy this particular machine, they're instead making themselves available everywhere. So, you know, older PCs, older consoles, smartphones, tablets, can anything with a screen, you know, you can pretty much play Minecraft on or Fortnite. And that gives them access to a much bigger audience than would have been possible otherwise.
And you say, Adam, that Sony and Microsoft, they were slow to react to all of this. What about Nintendo?
Yeah, well, Nintendo are actually well ahead of the curve on this shift away from the kind of graphics arms race, because after its GameCube lost the battle to Sony's PlayStation 2, technically, despite it being more powerful, they decided to take a different approach. So back in 2006, while Sony and Microsoft were launching beefed up, more powerful consoles, and Nintendo came along with the Wii, which was essentially a generation behind in terms of the power and what it could do. But Nintendo focused instead on a kind of novelty factor of building in motion controls. So you swung the controller around to control what was happening in game. And they reckoned that feature would draw in a wider audience than beyond the kind of more hardcore gamer. And the fact that it wasn't using the latest and greatest hardware also meant they could sell it for cheaper than Sony and Microsoft were able to do, and they could sell it at a profit as well. And it was a really good bet, because, well, the Xbox 360 and PS3 were pitching at the hardcore gamer, the Wii became a kind of family console. And it also became the kind of second console, even for the hardcore gamers, because it had so many decent titles on it. In the end, the Wii outsold the PS3 and the Xbox 360 by more than 14 million units over the lifetime of PS. And, you know, those motion controls were initially dismissed as gimmicky by Microsoft and Sony, but they actually then rushed to add similar features into their own consoles. They realised they'd missed the trick. It should be said, Nintendo then came out with the Wii U, and that was a flop, so they didn't get it right all the time. But then they rebounded in 2017 with the Switch, and again, that formula of less powerful, cheaper, easy to play, fun to play, and it's worked. It's now the third best-selling console of all time, behind the Nintendo DS and the PlayStation 2. And the PS2 is kind of artificially inflated because, you might remember, it would also play DVDs, and a lot of people bought it as a DVD player, which happened to play games, so it kind of boosted the sales. Mm-hmm. Now, it's also worth noting that, you know, it's not just that they came out with these kind of clever consoles. Nintendo also know how to make really great games, like, you know, Super Mario is always good crack. Mario Kart, great fun. Animal Crossing has been an example of this kind of gentle gaming trend that we've seen grow as well. The likes of Zelda Breath of the Wild has been critically acclaimed as well, has been a big seller. And, it looks amazing, which kind of undermines that argument that whatever's left of it, that you need to have a really powerful machine to have a good looking game. This game has managed to do it on a much weaker kind of console. So, you know, neither the Wii or the Switch would have been successes without Nintendo backing it up with really good games. But it does highlight this realization that many gamers are having now, that graphics aren't everything. We have enough power. It's now about how you use it and how clever you are with the game that you build.
Well, Adam, we couldn't talk about video games without playing out now with one of the most iconic video game theme tunes. This is Tetris.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.